works. When you have higher standards, you will reach more in your life because you're living of excellence and people will trust you more. And when they trust you, you can go to battle together because we need more trust in this world with each other. Because we have too many people saying this and then not doing it.
Hi friends, welcome back to the Hey Presley podcast. In today's conversation, I'm chatting with Darlene Santor, or more commonly known as Coach Dar. As a board-certified occupational therapist, business executive, speaker, and survivor of multiple strokes, she is passionate about helping people break through barriers to achieve their goals. She blends a knowledge of science, psychology, and achievement with her personal passion for life, and her clients range from Fortune 100 executives, artists, and professional athletes to high school and college students, as well as large organizations. She was awarded Most Inspiring Woman from the WNBA. She is the United States Ambassador for Global Pay It Forward Day and is the mental conditioning coach for the Phoenix Suns. Coach Dar has helped thousands of people raise the bar in their lives to break free so they can break through and reignite their hearts to live a purposeful life. Our interview is wide-ranging and super tactical. I really wanted to drive home the practical things that you can do today to level up your mental game. Please enjoy this delightful, inspiring, and wisdom-packed conversation with Coach Dar.
But first, I want to say thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. I know it is valuable, and I know that the listeners are going to get a lot out of our conversation. I know that you, while working at a hospital that actually specialized in traumatic brain injury and stroke patients, that you actually suffered your own health complications at just 25. So can you kind of set the scene for us about that time in your life and what happened?
Yes. So I'm an occupational therapist and I was treating at an amazing hospital that I worked at, Gaylord Hospital. And there I was on the stroke and traumatic brain injury unit when I experienced the symptoms of what I then found, well, I later found out was symptoms of a stroke onset. And so I was walking down the unit and the floor flipped upside down. The floor was the ceiling and the ceiling was the floor. And it was like this out of body experience because I could not literally see to know where to walk. So perceptually everything had shifted and I just had to like make my way down the stairs and to try to get help. And then it subsided. So I thought at 25, I must have a sinus infection.
Right.
Like I'm thinking something like, what is going on? And I had no idea that I was starting to bleed in my brain because it was a slow onset. And it all came from when I had gone to see a chiropractor and they manipulated my neck, they ripped my vertebral artery. And that was the slow bleed. So when I started to feel the symptoms, that was after the effect. And it left me with a blood clot in the base of my brain that I didn't find out. They had misdiagnosed me when they had seen the image of the blood clot. They told me it was a tumor. So they misdiagnosed it. So it delayed knowing what was actually going on, which delayed treatment. And then what happened is the brain built scar tissue around it. And so then they couldn't go in and do surgery. But the good news was the scar tissue was protecting it to some extent. But that was a time in my life that I was, we had just bought the book. I was married at the time. We had just bought the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. I come from an Italian family. We were going to have family. And that went out the window at that moment because if I got pregnant, it could push the blood clot. And so then, you know, there's a chance the child would make it, but I might not. So that was a very big life decision on what you were going to do then. And just I had to make life changes overall because the doctor was like, don't cough too hard. Don't run too much. Don't go on like roller coasters. Don't do it. I was like, what? I was like, you're like telling me not to live.
Right. So
that became an early lesson that I now later on share is you want to be respectful of, you know, being cautious, but you also don't want to live in fear and not live because we don't know how much time we have regardless, whether the blood clot would dislodge any day and I could die or not. None of us know. And I worked in a hospital where every day these were people, top executives of companies, everyone that comes in the hospital, everyone gets basically all is one when you come in the hospital for treatment and your life changes in an instant. And you never thought something like a spinal cord injury or a brain injury would happen to you, a car accident, whatever, head injury. So it makes you very aware of living life to the fullest.
Absolutely. And I mean, being in your mid-20s, I mean, I'm in my mid-20s. I can't
yes.
even imagine. What kind of things did you do to navigate this huge life change? You know, you have these other plans and now you have to take a different direction. And it's probably a lot of, maybe guilt isn't the right word, but knowing that like something in the healthcare industry helped contribute to what you were experiencing. How did you kind of navigate all of those feelings?
Well, everything is hindsight. So I won't say that how I handled it then and now what I know now, because I always downplay a lot of things, because when you're a caretaker and a therapist, you're always the one trying to help people. So it's often hard to receive help. So I would kind of downplay a lot of things and I'd push through it. I literally pushed through the whole thing, and I probably did not give myself enough grace to heal in the way that I should have right away. So I threw myself more into work.
Yeah.
And I love work, so I just kept throwing myself in it, and I went back to school for business to try to then run healthcare, which then I did run healthcare, and then found out that's crazy. and then that's when 2008 came, when I started my own practice, and I was like, I'm going to get to people before it was too late. And that's when the healing really started, is when I went out on my own, and it was the best thing that ever happened. But now that I look back, I probably would have done things a little bit different, but it's all part of the story. You know, there's an expression and a quote by Asha Tyson, and it says, "Your journey has molded you for the greater good. Don't think that you lost time. It took each and every moment to bring you to the now, and now is right on time." So we have to go through things. We have to experience it, and it brings us to our now. So to not live in regret and to not live in fear and know that, yeah, maybe we made mistakes, but like GPS, we get rerouted. As long as you know and you have a purpose and you have something bigger than you guiding you, you will find your way. You will always find your way, but you have to believe and you have to stay on that course no matter how hard it is, because the other option is giving up, and that's not an option.
Sure. Absolutely. And so to backtrack a little bit, you know, I read that you went back to school and wanted to be a part of this healthcare company, and that you did end up leading, being the president of a healthcare company. Why did you decide to leave that venture and start your own business?
The healthcare company ended up going through a reorganization and had huge challenges as a whole. It was a big entity. And when it did that, that was a big wake-up call for me, a big learning experience. And that allowed me to reflect on things. And when I did, I decided, by that point, I was literally kind of overseeing four companies, in essence, through the parent company. I was living by the BlackBerry. I had learned so much from this, and I was like, what am I doing? I'd already had my stroke. I was like, this is maddening. And I saw what was done wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I knew what had to be changed to do right. And you know, part of making mistakes is learning and then rerouting from it, not making the same mistakes, or learning from people's mistakes, your own and others, and then say, how do you do it better? And that gave me the chance to really reset on what I want to do and create things the right way and do it the way I wanted to be able to reach people. So it was a huge blessing, but it was in 2008, which was a recession, which my father was like, you're going to go leave and go start what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to just go start my own practice now. He's like, I would have shoveled sugar for what you're making, and you're going to go do what? And I was like, yep. And I did. But that's an entrepreneurial spirit, because you have such unbelievable belief and greater change that you just go for it. And that's the best way, to just jump.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did occupational therapy lend itself to life coaching, if at all? Like, how did your background those years lead into now mindset coaching and what you're doing now?
Well, occupational therapy is really the original life coach, because it started 100 years ago. And what happened was, World War II veterans were coming out of battle and they were physically getting rehabbed, but they didn't have the ability to emotionally know how to cope, mentally know how to cope, cognitively know how to. So while they were physically getting helped, there was not someone who looked at them as a whole. So occupation is everything. It's your home, your roles, mm-hmm, at home, at business, at life. So helping people transition into their roles, or helping them excel in whatever role they are, that's occupational therapy. We look at mind, body, and spirit, as you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, and we help people live life to the fullest by helping them both emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally, cognitively. So it's really where that started. And this is before life coaching was a fad.
Yeah.
And I don't mean a fad, before it became popular.
Sure.
But we have extensive training in neuroscience and neuropsychology. I mean, we have to dissect the human cadaver, the brain, everything. We go through mental. We're mental health practitioners. We're cognitive practitioners, and also physical. So there's intensive training. So it goes beyond just a course, and it's really a it's a board certification, and that's how it lends itself, because they are it's not a separate for me. It is one, and it's the path that I've been on for 22 years as a therapist.
That is so cool. One of my best friends is an occupational therapist. I can't wait to tell her, like, I didn't realize you were so qualified.
Oh, most definitely.
That's awesome. I love that application, because I don't think a lot of people realize that.
No.
And I feel like I know the answer, but I would love to hear in your words, what is the importance of looking at the person as a whole instead of diagnosing these individual issues? Because I think our society is getting better. But as somebody that's also had my own bout of health issues, I know that it's hard to go to a doctor who works on one thing and feel like you're getting the right answer. So why is it so important to address people as whole people?
Well, because we are one whole. Like your arm is not separate from your body. It's part of your body. Your leg isn't separate. You know, it's all connected to one. The same with the mind and the heart. It's connected. And we often try to separate it, but you have to look at the whole. So if someone, let's say, I do a lot of obviously mental conditioning coaching in sports. When I'm looking at someone's performance, because that's what I'm being asked to, but really I'm looking at them as a human, I'm looking just at that. I'm looking at, okay, well, maybe their shot is off. What's affecting that? What's going on in their world, their life, mentally? What might be tripping them up? Emotionally, what are they carrying? What maybe did they do earlier in the week that maybe triggered something? Is it your even body language? What's happening as an entrepreneur? You know, you're going out, you could have one day where it's going really well. You know, you've been able to organize one day. You had great, you know, interactions with people. You might've pitched someone and it went really well and you were so cognitively there. And then later in the week, it's just not going right. And it's like, okay, where'd that shift come from? Is there a pattern? So I help teach people how to watch their thoughts and their patterns, because they're connected to us as a whole. And those will play into how we then show up, which I'm air quoting performance. That's like how people see us, but there's stuff that happens before we just show up. So everything is holistic. And if we don't continue to look at the person as a whole, we are missing some key things that will truly help them. And even for anyone listening, look at yourself as a whole. You want to look at things and say, okay, what's going on holistically here? Because when you do, you could start to find out how to fix it and how to make it better. But it's a game changer when you do. So I think that medicine as a whole needs to start integrating all doctors and treatments and even medical, all of it, because you can't just have one report and then the doctor doesn't read the other report and you're like, well, those don't match.
Right.
But the same goes for our business. I mean, think about when you're running businesses, you can't have silos in companies because communication breaks down. Marketing needs to know what sales is doing and operation is doing. In sports, we need to know, the coaches need to know, the players need to know, front office needs to know. There's got to be great communication. You have to look at everything as a whole. And then you could start breaking down, okay, who's going to take what, and then what do we need to niche or do skill-wise?
Yeah. That's so valuable. And there's a couple of things that you said that I want to call out. The first is, I think it's funny isn't the right adjective, but when you said, you know, people will bring you in to look at somebody's shot, and then really it comes down to like, what are you thinking? What's your body language? And I've experienced that so much in my nutrition coaching company. People come to me, I just need to be told what to eat, or I just need to be told, you know, when to eat. And then it's like, really, we find out that we have to work on your relationship with food and your environment and all these things. But those people maybe don't realize that they need to come to somebody and say, my environment is toxic, or the way I'm thinking about food or talking to myself.
Yes.
But that's what we end up discovering and needing to work on. So I think that that's such a good call out. Go ahead.
I think I want to add something too. I think when people, mental conditioning and how we keep growing is all from the belief system. Like you think about it, you have to keep looking at. So when you just said about nutrition, I just want to know what to eat. Well, what's their belief system around food and what's their patterns and what did they do? There's a relationship there that has to be looked at. So if you just went and said, well, let's just go shopping and we'll figure out what foods that are going to be good and not even customize it to that, that's not looking at them as a whole person. But I know you look at them as a whole person, and that's why you were so in tune to say, no, let's look at what your relationship is to food or what's going on.
Sure. Absolutely. Something you said was, you know, then you teach them to become more aware of their own thoughts and their own beliefs. And I think that is one of those concepts that is obviously so much easier said than done. And we live in a world now where people are going 100 miles an hour. And if you ask them what they had for breakfast, they're like, I don't know, that was yesterday. So what are some of the beginning steps in teaching people to become more self-aware of their own thoughts?
Mindfulness. This is such a big thing. Emotional intelligence and mindfulness are huge components of my practice. When I'm working with anyone, I'm trying to, one, get them to be emotionally intelligent at their highest level, which is just awareness, awareness of self, awareness of how they show up, awareness of how they interact with others. And once you can get people to have that mental awareness and emotional intelligence, they start to have better communications, not only internally, but externally with others. And then the mindfulness. Are you aware of when you are sitting with someone, mindful of your body language? When you're speaking, are you mindful of your tone that you're using? You know, with your nutrition coaching, are you mindful that you might be scoffing down your food in like literally 10 minutes? Because you might have come from, like, when I grew up in the East Coast, we had 30 minutes to eat a lunch, which really meant 15 by the time you got it and sat down. So you ate quick. And then when I moved to Nashville and everyone had an hour and a half lunch, I was like, wow, everyone eats so slow here. And they were like, no, you just eat too fast. And then I learned how important that was to eat slow. Yeah. But it also became about just awareness and this mindfulness. And I think if people could start to just pause before they walk into the next meeting, before they jump on the next call, before they approach someone and just say, okay, what's going on in my body? Am I anxious right now? You know, am I a little bit agitated? How am I about to show up? And then also, if you're about to go to another meeting or walk into a room or take the court or take the ice, check in with yourself so that you can make some adjustments right there rather than starting, having to backtrack, saying something you shouldn't, a play going wrong, whatever. Start to get really mindful in the moment. And you could do it in seconds. I mean, I work with pitchers, which you could see how fast the game is. As soon as they get thrown the ball back, when they turn around to go to the mound, I'm asking them to be mindful right in that second on how they're going to show up. Or in hockey, when they, you know, get the puck, how mindful they are right before that happens. Or in basketball, before they get the shot. Or in business, are you mindful about how you walk into a room or what you're about to say? So there's an acronym that my very good friend Laura Lynn had come up with, and it's WAIT. Why am I talking?
I like that.
So other than the pause that I was just talking about being mindful, there's also WAIT. You know, ask yourself, why am I talking when you're about to go engage in business? Because sometimes people just feel like they have to say something, and it's okay to just pause and be there and be present. Because I think some of the most beautiful moments when people could really sit there, have a conversation, and just be there and not feel like you have to fill the room to say something and that you're really listening. People feel heard and appreciated when you do.
Love that. And that's so good to call out, you know, that that awareness and that pause is what comes before then asking yourself why you're talking or making the change. Because I think that there's probably a lot of people listening that know they want to show up differently for their spouse or for their business or right. or in a professional sports game. But you can't do that until you become aware of what you're already doing. So I love that.
And it's a practice. You have to start and say, okay, I know this is going to take time, but just start with when you are driving home before you walk in the house, do a pause. Or before you go from call to call or meeting to meeting, just decide, okay, this week, let me take one of these things and I'm going to try to do the pause before I start to interact and see how you show up better.
Totally. And one thing that I did want to ask you is how the practices or techniques that you use with, you know, teams like the Phoenix Suns differ from what you would teach an individual or an executive, but it sounds like maybe they don't differ that much. It's just the practical application. Would you say that that's pretty true?
Yes. And just because of the type of therapist and the work I've done for so long, I look at everyone as their own individual human being, and the occupation of where they are just changes arenas, but the brain is the brain, the mind is the mind, and the heart is the heart. So for me, when I'm working on the brain-heart connection, when I'm working on helping someone, whether it's an entrepreneur, a chairman, a CEO, an executive, or an 11-year-old little girl or boy gaining confidence, it all becomes the same in a sense, meaning I'm going to approach their brain-heart connection, their emotional intelligence, their awareness. Now, each person becomes customized you know, I've learned more plays in sports than I've ever known. I mean, I've always been in sports, but I mean, I've watched so much film that I'm like, okay, put me in, coach.
Yep.
But in the sense, I get to know, like when I get to work with an executive and I'm working in their business, I get to know every part of their business so that I can understand the world they're walking in. But that's my role as an occupational therapist and mental conditioning coach. I have to look at their world. And then I could go to, okay, let's see how you're showing up. But I have to understand where they're, what the role, the arena they're playing in. But I'm essentially always working on the human.
Yeah.
The business will take care of the business. The plays will take care of the plays, and the performance will excel when you can get people to show up at their highest level.
Love that. And, you know, people that are working with you are trying to show up at their highest level. They're trying to improve their performance. They're trying to better themselves as humans. And I think that there's a fine line there between working really hard to be your best self and avoiding burnout, which is something that I know before we hopped on, we were chatting about how that's so common in entrepreneurship because we're hustling 25 hours a day trying to build businesses. So how do you find that balance for people between chasing your best self and wanting to improve and not burning out and not giving yourself the grace that you need?
So this is really good. You want to be able to set goals and you want to be able to, you know, help visualize, work on them. But you also have to make sure, going back to mindfulness, that you stay present in the moment. Because when you stay present in the moment, you could find balance in the day by that versus being in anxiety about the next thing that's going to happen. So gratitude allows you to be thankful for where you are. Well, what would be the right word? Well, inspiration and motivation is to keep you going to what you're called to. So you want to be inspired to what you're called to do, but you want to stay in gratitude to where you are so you can find that balance. But what we've talked about is there's this whole thing on hustle now, hustle, 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 like sleep when you're dead. No, you will be called home earlier than you should. No, there are some people that we have seen that have been able to do extreme odds. That is fantastic, but that is not for everyone. And everyone has their own unique skill set. And we have to try to find, okay, do it by projects. If you know you're going to be doing something and it's going to be, you have to be all in for maybe a few months on this project, you just know that. But then when it's up, you take a reprieve. Mm-hmm. Or like schedules, when I'm working with athletes, okay, we know we're going to go, you're going to have to go for this bout. And then where's an off day you could do? And what could you do in that off day that's so quality of restorative care for you that you could go another few weeks again before another restorative? So you have to find light at the end of the tunnel. And I even tell couples, when one person is working so hard and they're not seeing each other, and I'll say, make a pact. We're going to go this long on this, and then we have to have our time, you know, because sometimes people are flying every week. So how do you make time for each other? The same for yourself. Okay, I'm going to go this long because I know this project's coming up. Or like when I have multiple speaking events, or if I'm traveling with a team or whatever it may be, I know I have to go for a period and then I have to create it. Because I've learned from example too, where I've gone, where it's pushed me to have another, I've had three. So, but all to say, you have to figure out what works for your body. I know now I have to get sleep. 6 hours is my minimum. So whereas before I'd say, oh, if I got three or four, it'll be okay. No way. But I'm teaching you what I learned. And I also felt so. You sure. Can't hustle so much that you burn yourself out, because then you're no longer passionate. You become resentful. And it will make you sometimes steer away from the very thing that you're still supposed to be called on and to be doing. But it was just burnout. It wasn't that it wasn't the right thing. So
that's such a good call out. That's so good. I would imagine that with athletes and organizations and really individuals, you're confronted with a lot of helping people navigate failure or perceived failure. So what's a piece of advice that you would give to someone working through a tough situation or an unfavorable outcome?
I relate this so much. So it's a mindset. You already have to start telling yourself that. I fill their head with every famous failure. Everyone who's ever, the only reason we know about people that we read about are because they stuck through it, through every sort of failure. That's the only reason we know about them. We don't know about the people who gave up because they didn't stick through it. So I'll say failure is your greatest lesson. And that if you could look that the only way you fail is when you stop. It's not about if it doesn't give you the right outcome, because you learn from it. So if you can learn from it, you produce something good. So that failure was not for loss. It always turns, there's fruit that's bared from it. So it ends up becoming something good. So you look at it, and I look at failure no different than, You know, we both love weight training. Mm-hmm. And I look at it as lifting, that when you tear a muscle, it grows. Well, every time you approach a failure, it rips you open to grow more. And it pulls you back to your comeback becomes your bigger, set you up for a bigger comeback. Your setback, sorry, set you up for a bigger comeback. So failure becomes the very thing that fuels us forward. And I feel that the most successful people, and success is not by dollars, it's by how well you've lived and the impact you've made. But I feel like those were the ones who went through some great adversity, because how could you understand how to continue and persevere if you haven't built up resiliency and grit? You've had to fail. You had to overcome extreme odds. And those that have overcome extreme odds and built this mental toughness through it, that doesn't mean it doesn't stink when you're going through it, but you're going, okay. I mean, every time I've ever had a failure, I was like, you know what? I don't like this, but this just means that it's going to allow me to propel forward. And I could use it as a stepping stone to go higher. And someone said to me, Dar, since you've had 3 strokes, it's probable that you might have a 4th. And I say, that's right. And they said, what if it ever ends up that you end up being paralyzed, that you're in a wheelchair? And I said, well, that's not what I want, but that just means that that's my platform of where I'm going to have to teach from there. Like, I'm already mentally prepared. Or when I had the 3rd stroke, it was so hard. I did all my own rehab and it was really hard some days, but I was so driven on going, this setback, I'm going to learn from this and help me to grow. So as long as I had that mentality, I used it to fuel me, not to hold me back. You either stay in the victim role or the victor role. It's your choice.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think somebody could hear that and think like, absolutely, I don't want to be the victim. I believe everything you're saying. What kind of things do you encourage people to do, or have you had people do, to actually help them remember to do that? Because I think that it sounds really inspiring, but then it could be really easy to wake up tomorrow morning and feel like the victim again and be like, this sucks. So what kind of things can people, is it journaling? Yeah. Is it gratitude? Yeah. Like tangible things that people could do to actually take action on that?
Well, definitely write down as soon as you start to feel this, why you're feeling this. And then remember your first, I want you to remember visualization. Anything you've ever went through, you're already on the other side of it. Whatever hard challenge, you already are on the other side of it. So you know you made it over the other side. And then journal, okay, today's a really tough day. Why is it tough? What are my thought patterns doing? Am I perseverating on this more? How can I turn this into good? So flip in your mindset and use it to shift perspective. The other thing is get good people around you. So when I'm going through a really tough time, I say, okay, I get 24 hours to talk to you about this. And if it's something that, you know, they know that I only get 24 hours, but then you, that's it. I'm over it. You hold me accountable and I have to move forward. No pity party on this. Now, if it's something that I have to work through or I, you know, we tell each other we have to work through, then we know we have a little bit more time. So you go through, you feel the emotions of it because that's important, but then you have to make a move and keep going forward. So hold good people around you that you know confidentially you can go to and say, hey, I'm dealing with this today. Or today's a tough day, but I need your help to get me out of this. Like help me change my state or help me process through this emotionally.
Yeah, I love that accountability aspect.
Mm-hmm. And move. I just want to say movement. Yeah. Because the other part is when you're having really tough days, move. Momentum and movement and physical activity will help your brain so much feel better. And isolating and staying in and perseverating in the emotion sometimes will hurt you. And then the other thing is serve. When you are ever really down, go and serve people because that will get you out of your state sometimes and help you to propel to go forward.
I love that. Yeah, I was reading about the, is it Give Back Day that you
do? Pay It Forward Day.
Pay It Forward Day, yeah. What is that?
It's a global day that happens on April 28th. And it's where 86 countries now come together. I oversee it. I'm the ambassador for the United States. It's all volunteer. So anyone listening, go to globalpayitforwardday.com, subscribe to it, be a member. It's volunteer. And the beautiful thing about this is we do it on a non-holiday. It's a day to just start to shift your mindset to say, this is a lifestyle that when you go out and you do acts of kindness, whether that's verbally, physically, help someone, it not only makes you feel good, but it helps others and we make an impact in this world. And on that day, we now have done 20 million acts of kindness worldwide in one day. So think about that. That's a volunteer. No money is like you could use, but it's not like we've taken money to go help. We've just encouraged people to say, will you join us stand for kindness, put a heart on your hand, share on social media and say, I stand for kindness. We're not going to wait for change. We're going to be the change. We're going to make a difference in this world. And the stories that come in, we literally had pictures of people in Africa sweeping out huts, helping out their fellow people. We had people from Saudi Arabia. We had people that were in Mexico helping each other. I mean, all over the world sharing in this day to say, we stand for kindness. And then you start to realize the power of service and kindness and what it does when you go help someone out that can never repay you back. You know, I was walking in the airport. It was late. It was like 11 o'clock. There was this this like candy covered apple and I hadn't eaten and I wanted like a sweet treat. And I was like, I want a slice. So I went and got this amazing big apple and I was going to eat it when I got home. And as I was walking through the airport, this lady walks next to me and I could tell she worked at the airport that she was just down. And so I'm saying this, pay it forward is not just big things, but being aware. This woman really looked sad and I just looked at her and I said, I'm not sure what you're going through, but I just bought this candy covered apple and I want you to have it. And I said, I haven't even eaten it. And she starts crying and she says, it's my 6-year-old's birthday. I work multiple jobs. I didn't have time to get him anything. She's like, at least now I'm not going to go home empty handed. You have no idea what this did for me.
Oh,
so, I mean, simple, but it's about, are you aware of the people around you? Because if we all could be a little bit more aware of others, we might, and we lean in, you end up caring and loving for people. And then it starts obliterating hate and all of that unkindness that happens out there.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I will definitely link that website in the show notes so people can get engaged with it super easily. What a powerful story. That gave me chills. And I'd love to hear you explain what your Raise the Bar campaign is and then what it means to raise the bar. I've heard you say that a lot. I know it's in your email signature. Yeah. So I'm dying to know the meaning behind it.
It's, you know, I always have these hashtags that I'll, when I'm for every year, certain places that I speak, I'll put out like a phrase and to get people like hashtag all in or, you know, hashtag level up and then hashtag raise the bar. Really just took off and it kind of matches what level up. And it's not about doing more. Raise the bar is raising your standards. So raising the standards on how you show up, that if we're ever going to make a difference, we have to start by how we lead and what we do. People are watching us all the time and that people get hurt because they hear us say something, but then we do something else. Mm-hmm. And so raise the bar is when you are going to go out in this world, are you leading with excellence? Are you someone of an integrity? Can people trust you? And you start to do the small things really well, and then you'll be trusted in the big things. If you can't be trusted in the small things, you can't be trusted in the big things. So you start training yourself. So I start breaking down little examples to get people to remember this in their brain where I say, have you ever gone to like Target or some store and you put something down on a shelf where it doesn't belong? And most people say, yeah, I've totally done that. I've put something down where it hasn't. And I said, you no longer could do that. Now it raised the bar is in your head. Think about this. When you put something down, you're telling the world it's someone else's job to pick up after me. Yeah. And first of all, who started that? Where did it ever become okay that we could just do whatever like that? So you raise the standard because now if you have kids, you go home, you say, go pick up your room. They're going to go, why? You don't put things away. Why? You don't. And now I want you to take that to business. Say someone who works for you or with you, they see you in the store do that. They're going to be like, that person completely disrespects potentially someone else's role. And you also as a human don't want to do that. You want to live of such excellence that you train your brain that you won't do that. You'll go bring it back and put it where it belongs. This starts to play in your day everywhere. So imagine now I'm in my hotel room and I tell people I'll like try to make a shot with my water bottle into the garbage can. If it falls to the left of the garbage can, no one's going to see it if I left it there, but I pick it up and I put it in. If I see something like a sink in the public bathroom and it's wet, I wipe up the sink so it doesn't make someone else's, you know, I call it wet belly syndrome where they walk out with a wet mark, right? But I'm trying to leave my space better than I found it and I'm trying to leave others better than I found them. So when I speak to them, I raise the bar and how I show up. I leave them better than I found them. I talk positive. I talk life into them. A stranger. My mission is to awaken greatness. I could be in the Starbucks line and I'm like, someone says hi. And I'm like, let's go. How am I going to make their day great? Maybe it's a smile. I raise my standards so high that I live of such excellence because it pushes myself to keep excelling. Because what's the other option? Lower standards means everyone starts dropping to you. And raise the bar is you want to be the person when you walk in the room, they're like, I am so glad that Presley just walked in the room because we're so going to win in life, in friendship, in everything we do, because she just brings this positive energy. She raises the bar. I mean, if you think about the top executive, the top entrepreneur, the top athlete, they come in with such standards and expectations that they're like, this is how I set, this is how I practice, this is how I show up. I don't accept anything else. And it's not about being rigid, but it's about having standards. When you have higher standards, you will reach more in your life because you're living of excellence and people will trust you more. And when they trust you, you can go to battle together because we need more trust in this world with each other because we have too many people saying this and then not doing it. So even raise the bar is if you tell someone you're going to call them back, you call them back. And now with text messages, do not leave people hanging for days and you're like, ah, I'll get to them. And then you never do. That's like starting a conversation and not, but you want to be someone who said, and even if you can't say, hey, I'm tied up, I'll get back to you then, or well, say something just to let people know that you're there, but raise the bar in all you do. Leave people better than you came and leave environments better than you came. Train your brain now that what you do is always of the utmost and people will really start to believe in you more and you will go higher because of that.
I love that. That's so good. And those are such good practical examples where I'm sure people that were listening to that and like, oh yeah, I've done that. Walked by a wet sink and thought, oh, that's annoying. The sink's wet and done nothing about it. And what if all of the listeners started doing something? It would have a compounding effect.
Right, right. The ripple effect's huge.
I know you just mentioned that your mission is to awaken greatness, which how eloquently said is that? I know in the personal development space, it's really common to talk about finding your why or finding your purpose. What are your thoughts on why that's so important? And what if somebody's listening to this thinking, I have no idea what my purpose is. I have no idea what my why is. What's some like starting steps?
That is a great thing. And often people don't know right away until someone teaches them or explores it with them. And I'll say, start with, I had my mentor who said to me, if it was your last day, and they were saying your eulogy. And I've now shifted it to where I heard someone say, they shared it with me, it's your 100th birthday and they're giving a toast. I like that better. But it's your 100th birthday and they're giving a toast. What are people saying? What did your legacy, what did you show up? How did you live? And what was the kind of core value that people all kind of came around and they were like, this is what you helped me experience, live, feel. So when you're looking at this, make it your mission to find out what's like almost a core value. And Lori Beth Jones, who's my mentor, she teaches this a lot. Your core value starts to become your mission statement. And your mission statement is who you want to be known for. And so mine is awaken greatness. My whole mission statement is to motivate, inspire, and awaken greatness in myself and others globally. So I wake up to that every day. Now, that has nothing to do with the role. I could be CEO of a company. I could be working anywhere. I could be working by myself. I could be a mom. I could not be a mom. I could be married. I could not be married. Like people tie their mission to a role, but the role is going to change. So if your job title changes, your mission doesn't have to change because your job title, if your kids grow up and you know, empty nester, now you're like, well, I was supposed to be a mom. Well, you still are, but your mission's bigger than that. So make your mission statement be something that is more of a core value that you want to be known for. And Google it. Go Google and say, okay, what are core values? What resonates with me? Circle 10, circle 5, bring it down to 3 and then find 1 and put a verb to it. And then come up with this where it's going to be your statement that you wake up to. And when you're looking at this, if every business has to have a mission statement to open its doors, to be its sword and its harness, so they align things that and people that align with their mission statement and they cut away what doesn't, well, if that's their guiding principle, we need it for ourselves because every day then we will wake up and be like, oh, that's sparkly. Oh, that's good. Maybe I'll do that. Left, right, left. And you're going all over the place and you're exhausted. But when you have a mission, you could say, does this align with what I personally want to be known for how I want people to be, to know my value system and who I am? If it doesn't, I'm not aligning with this job. I'm not aligning with this organization. I'm not going to take on this hobby. It just doesn't align with what I want to do. And when you could say no to more, you'll be more available to say yes in a big way. And that's what the mission statement really allows you to do. I got asked by a really amazing company to be their a C-level exec for them. And I turned them down and everyone thought I was crazy because it paid really well and all of these great things. I said, no, it didn't allow me to awaken greatness. I was not with people helping them. So I would have done all that, but I would have been so unhappy and I would have not been using my gift. And I'll say this one last thing on this. Each day you get is your thank you back for being alive. So if you understand that, then you will understand that it is so important that you align with something that you're called to, because each of us are given a gift and our gift is to be shared back with the world. It's how we all elevate together. And when you keep going towards that and you understand that we're here to serve others, for you to use our gift to help others. I mean, even a musician has that gift, but their sound of music enriches our life because of it. The surgeon who goes in and helps with, you know, heart surgery or brain surgery, they got to use their gift so someone could have life again. Yeah. The entrepreneur who comes up with a new creation or product or way or a system makes our life better. All of us are using our gift to make our lives better and the world better. That's how we all rise together. That is why it's so important to follow your calling, your purpose, because it's destined within you. Find it and go after it, and then don't let it go.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Drop the mic. What are your thoughts on your purpose or your calling changing over time?
Definitely. So you're going to be called in different spaces or places. And in general, I awaken greatness. I will help people, but how I do it might change. So in this role with my business, I'm doing this, but there was a company that called me to come on and I was their chief performance officer, but I was running my practice and I was like, whoa, that took me complete. Like I was not, and it moved me to Arizona. I was like in Nashville, happy as a clam, thinking I was going to ride into the sunset. And then God takes me and says, it's time for you to go to Arizona. I was like, no, but I still got to use my gift. It just was in a different space on where I did it, but I was still using it. So I have a friend who is very talented and creative, and they were doing their job in one avenue and one place. But then someone called them. They said, you're so creative. I feel like you should help us build our company and be on our board. And he was working in advertising. So he was marketing and doing all that, but he was such a creative. He then built and started this company. And so someone would have thought, like, how did you ever get there? And he's like, but he didn't leave his gifting or his calling. He just changed the environment of it.
Yeah.
So it will morph in various places and ways, but ultimately you will find that you're gifted in certain areas and that will parlay into different things. I mean, Richard Branson has how many companies?
Right.
But yeah. He's an entrepreneur through and through, and his gift is visionary. He's such a visionary and he wants to create these epic experiences for people. So he does that through different avenues.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so good. And you had one call out that I thought was so great. One of them was, you know, that your gift can be, whether it's a skill or it's something that you do or it's something that you believe, like it doesn't have to be this isolated thing that I sometimes think we think about a gift as.
Right.
That's so valuable. And one of the books that I love is Principles by Ray Dalio. And he talks about having these guiding principles that you can make your decisions by. And I think that's so important because there is so many things in life that are shiny and this seems like a great opportunity and all your friends are doing this. But if you can get clear on what is aligned with your greater purpose or your calling, it makes it so much easier to say yes and no to the right opportunities.
Absolutely. You have more confidence.
Wow.
And you're more excited and you have more energy. I mean, if we're all looking for energy, just align in your purpose and you'll have it.
Right. Stop buying energy drinks and spend
some time. Yes. Yes.
That's so good. So if someone wants to work on their mental game this week, today, I know we touched a little bit on gratitudes and doing some journaling. What are like the top three things that they should start doing?
Well, I know everyone's heard this a million times, but it's going to ring true as you really have to start with your morning routine. To start on your mental game, you have to start as soon as you open your eyes with what are you doing to fill yourself with? What is your morning routine like? Because you can't give what you don't have. So how do you start off your morning? Is it completely chaotic, erratic, and all over the place? Guess what's going to happen with your day? completely erratic and all over the place. It's going to be hard to get locked in and into flow. So can you start off in the morning with some quiet time? Can you start with movement and exercise? Can you start off with journaling? Can you just start with even meditation and just pausing and setting the attention? Now, I know some people say, I can't exercise the morning with my routine or my family or my kids or getting it all together, so they'll do in the afternoon. However you decide, make it consistent. But start with being consistent with some sort of routine. And even if it's one thing in the morning that you could start aligning to, whether it's meditation, prayer time, movement, mindfulness, journaling, start with one thing and then build on that to make your morning ritual, because that is the greatest way to set up your mental game. And I will also say, within your morning time, you have silence if you can. But then if you can't, I will say, some families could say, hey, we're going to do silence, you know, every morning for whatever. Some are like, yeah, right, I can't do that. Then I will say, I'm a big component of music too. Put on something that is going to get you going. I'll say, you never have an athlete go out, run out of the tunnel or onto the ice or onto the court without music or the field.
Right.
Our greatest game we're going to play is the game of today, of our life, of when we show up. So how are you entering into that game with no music? Like, what's your anthem? So I always say, pick your anthem every morning. Like, after you've done your thing, go ahead and start lighting up yourself and getting yourself going. Play your anthem, but that plays so much. And pick something that is happy for you. Don't be putting on some sad song that you know emotionally, or even a happy song that was in a bad relationship. No, that's a trigger.
Right.
Put something on, and you could start when you're in, say you're with friends or you're at a place and it's really great and you're having the best time and it's one of those moments that you would just want to capture it mentally. Go ahead and put music on and sync it to your brain right there in that moment and say, this song is connected to this moment. So when you leave that moment and you hear that song, you're making all good mental notes right there. It's like a competitive advantage because it's almost the switch that turns you on. You're like, when I hear this song, it's great. It puts me in that great memory, that great moment, and I'm on. Before I go give any speech, my friends close to me see me before I go to give a speech. I'm like crazy because I put on music and I'm amped up. And yeah. I'm like, let's go. But I'm usually a closing speaker or an opening, so I got to get everyone fired up. Well, I better fire myself up with some good music.
Yeah.
But it's about, if you want to help be more loving, fill yourself with love in the morning. If you have to bring more energy, fill yourself with energy. If you want to bring more flow and peace state, fill yourself with that. You can't give what you don't have, so put yourself in that. And mental conditioning starts with your belief system that you're going to have a good day.
Yeah.
And you want to visualize your meetings that you're going to have, and you want to visualize the interactions you're going to have, and you want to even visualize them going really well. I'll teach people when they're going to go give speeches, visualize everyone giving a standing ovation, visualize how it's going to go. Put yourself that you already won the game-winning shot, or you already closed that deal. Because if you can't visualize it, it's going to be really hard for you to show up and be like, well, I think I could do this.
Right.
You're counting yourself out.
Absolutely.
When you're writing your goals down, visualize them happening and how good that feels. Feel it. The greatest leaders are the ones who can cast vision for others to lead into, to follow, to be a part of movements. But if you can't even visualize what you could do for yourself, how could you lead others?
Absolutely. Well, and what a great, simple, free idea. I mean, I think there's so many courses and things that you can do to try and up-level your game, but like, you can do visualization and your morning routine for free at home tomorrow. And I think we're so often looking for quick fixes and things that are different, but it's like, people have probably heard that before. And I hope that it resonates, because I know that gratitudes and affirmations and journaling and music and all of these things have been so powerful for me, but I totally would have written it off before I was into personal
development. Completely.
That's too simple. Can't be that.
Breathing. I had a friend tell me years ago, breath is life. And I was like, lady, if I sit and breathe five more times with you, I'm like, I just want to go do something. She's like, you're missing it, Dar. And I was totally missing it. And breath is the key to life. Breathing brings you right into the moment. So to your point, those simple things that you're like, this is so simple. Okay, let's just look at the health world. Eat less. You know, you have to burn off more than you consume. That's just basic. We could buy every health book in the world, but movement is going to help our body. But you could go figure that all out, but I'm just saying the basics will always come back to help you. Then you add on what works for you. The key is consistency. And we want to overdo everything or overcomplicate it. Simple works and consistency works. And it's, even Warren Buffett says that about investing. Mm-hmm. If you would just be cognizant of even investing a small amount consistently, you will have something over time. But everyone wants this big hit and this big win. So look at the long-term gains that you will get from being consistent and don't look for the quick fix.
Absolutely. I just posted this something this morning about, you know, sticking with consistency through the boredom, because it, I think it is so, it's so much sexier to do something big, right? But that's not where the real change is made.
No, I mean, the Olympics, look at any Olympian. Do you know how many hours in the routines of the time that no one sees? Mm-hmm. And it blows my mind, because if someone's not a gold medalist, it's like people don't even know who those Olympians were. And I want, or they don't even give them street cred. I'm like, do you know what it took for that Olympian to be an Olympian? Their routine will outwork anyone in this room. And you're like, they didn't win a medal. What? I was like, do you know what it took? But my point other than that too is, they are so consistent for them to even make it to that level. And it's boring and it's hard, but that is their life and they chose it because it's their purpose, their calling at that moment.
Absolutely. I have to ask, since you said routines, having worked with a lot of athletes, do you have people that are like super superstitious and like wear certain socks on certain days and like only dribble the ball a certain way? And
I mean, yes, on 1,000% on that. I haven't met an athlete that wasn't superstitious, whether it's they have to, you know, at a foul shot, you know, the free throw line. I mean, they're going to do something to before the game, they're going to wear something, listen to something, dress the same way, definitely wear the socks the same way, everything, you know, it's why the commercial came up. It's only silly if it doesn't work.
Right.
So yes, they are. But you know what? If that's part of their routine and it's working for them, then as long as it's healthy, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so funny. My last few questions are more rapid fire style. You don't necessarily have to answer quickly, but they're questions that are a little simpler in nature or ones that I received from Instagram when I told the world that you'd be coming on the show. So the first one is, what books or books do you revisit often or do you gift the most often?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I love books. So I absolutely love the book, The Carpenter, and it's by John Gordon, and it's about leaders. If you want to lead, you have to love, serve, and care. I absolutely love it. And it's a simple, easy book, but it is so profound. And then he just came out with a new book, The Coffee Bean. Simple, simple principle, but the coffee bean can transform water and boiling water. But the carrot will get soft, the egg will get hard and in rigidity, but the coffee bean will transform. So when you get under pressure, are you breaking down? Are you becoming rigid? Or are you transforming those lives around you? Are you using the pressure to transform? So those are two great books. I love Essentialism. Absolutely love the book Essentialism. And it's gotten a lot of publicity around it. I love it so much. So if you haven't read it, read it. I love Mel Brooks's book, 5-4-3-2-1. And if you don't know that concept, go look it up. Mel Robbins is her name, but it's 5-4-3-2-1. And that in an instant you count down and you could switch your mindset and you act that you're not hesitating. So when your alarm goes off, you don't go into, should I get up? The brain's going to go, no, definitely. You should totally sleep in a little more. Should I do this? The moment you get into that hesitation space, you're not going to. So 5-4-3-2-1, act, do it. No hesitation. Reset the brain. Love that. I'm going to share this, but I love the Bible, and I'm not saying that to be religious. I'm saying it because to me, there is so much wisdom in there. If anyone just went to Proverbs in the Bible, they'd see so much wisdom on how to live life. So, and Bible stands for basic instructions before leaving earth. Someone shared that with me. I was like, that is awesome.
Yeah. I love
But so there's some books on that. And then, oh, Growth Mindset by Carol Dweck. Growth.
Oh, yeah.
Mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
Great book, because we're either in a fixed mindset or we're in a growth mindset, and you always want to be in a growth mindset. Absolutely. So those are ones that come. Oh, and a book that I give away, The Carpenter, a lot, and I give away Randy Pasch's book, The Last Lecture.
Mm.
It is so good, because he gave his last lecture and he wrote the book. He wrote basically about living while he was dying. He had pancreatic cancer. He was a professor. And those lessons and that book are so great. So I gift that book often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are great. And I will definitely put those in the show notes as well. And people can obviously pick up the book, but just to give them a little context, what is the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset?
So if you are the person, when someone says to you, hey, I have this way to help you, or I'd like to try this, or we're going to do this, you're like, no, I've already done it. No, that won't work. No, I don't want to go to that, even that concert. No, I don't like that. No, and it's no, I always go into, it won't work. You're in a fixed mindset. Whereas if you're in a growth mindset, you are open to possibilities, to change, to trying things, because the only way you could expand is to learn. And the way to learn is to be open to saying, you know what? Maybe there's something that I could learn from this person, this situation, even if, like, these principles, we might have heard them all before, but am I sharing it maybe in a different way that gets your mind to open up a little bit more? Mm-hmm. I hope so. And when you're listening to this, are you listening with, I've already heard this stuff and shut it off? Or are you listening all the way through to say, there might be one golden nugget that I'm going to be able to take from this. And maybe it's not even for you, but it's for you to learn for someone else. That's a growth mindset. So you always want to approach things. When people come to me, even when they're angry about something or they're sharing, I'm going, okay, where is this coming from? Stay open. Be growth mindset is like being like the bamboo tree, not the birch tree. The bamboo tree or the palm tree, The palm tree in a storm will bend all the way down and come back up and never break. The birch tree is rigid and hard. So in a storm, it just cracks or it'll break over time. So if we stay rigid in our physical body, in our mental space, and someone comes, we just break. We just react. But if we're like the palm tree, we could be malleable. We could bend. We could mold. We could listen. We could be resilient. And we withstand the storm. And we also could go longer in things. And that's how you have better relationships. It's how you have better teams. It's how you have a better business. Because you're open to even the customers that are maybe given some not so happy feedback. But what are you going to find from that?
Right.
So be in a growth mindset. Relationships, life, all of it. It makes life a lot easier and you'll go further.
Absolutely. Well, I'm bringing that level of self-awareness. You know, I think it's possible people listen to that description and think, oh, I don't do that. You know, but maybe you do more than you realize. So I think,
yes,
I have that conversation with clients often of, politely catching them on their fixed mindset, whether it comes to certain beliefs or certain foods or certain experiences. Right. And I think a lot of times we don't realize it. So like you said, that level of accountability, like having that conversation with the people close to you of working on this growth mindset so that you can also have people help catch you on it could be good.
Exactly. And the other thing too is with an example of that is someone once was asked to go to the orchestra, to the symphony, And the person said, I hate the symphony. Seriously. And they said, have you ever been to the symphony? They said, no, I don't even listen to that music. So the person said to them, would you please just go with me? I want you to experience this. So they went. And the person said, the reason I wanted you to go is not for you to end up liking it. I wanted you to experience it. So when someone sits down to you and they talk about the symphony, you now understand. Mm. You don't have to have liked it. You just have to understand where they're coming from. Think about that as a bigger metaphor for life. Imagine if we could just experience what someone's going to experience and so that we could understand where they're coming from rather than not having known at all. Because if you're going to help people or lead people, you want to know a multitude of situations. And that doesn't mean that you have to like it. Like I'll try various workouts and there's some that I'm like, I'm not, but now I'm going to say, oh yeah, I know exactly what that was like. I know where you're coming from. I could see why you like that.
Absolutely.
And they might say, do you do it? Well, no, I chose this, but this is for me. And that also gets you into spaces when you're going to have debates with people. You don't have to agree with them, but you could be open to where they're coming from.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Speaking of books, I know you have a book coming out this year, which is so exciting. So what can readers expect from your book?
It'll probably be next year because my stroke totally slowed up the process that I had last year. But it is really going to be something, it's taken me a long time. People have always asked me to write a book. And I say, I don't even know how I would take what's in my head for 22 years and put something out. But over time, this book is, I can't say the title or anything about it yet, but it's about getting people to really look about what's going to help propel them mentally, show up better in life, and not waste a minute of their time living this so that they could lead better, love better, and serve better, and really reach their optimal level in this world. And the things that you think maybe are going to fulfill you are not. So what is it that actually does? And you could know more once you read it.
Yeah, that's a good cliffhanger. Everybody's going to go,
yeah, now. Yeah.
What is something that you're really proud of?
I don't know. It's hard to, I feel like I'm very proud of, I guess I'm grateful. I feel weird saying the word proud, but I mean, I'm grateful for the way that I could be really present for people and be there for them and love on people and help them through. I'm grateful for all the lives that I've helped, because when I had to count it up and the lives that I've reached or helped, it's been over 100,000, and it kind of still blows my mind how many lives and people that I didn't even realize maybe got affected. So when I'm so passionate, if I could lose my life any day, I just want to get up and keep giving everything I have so that when I go home, I'm sliding in on home plate on empty. Mm-hmm. And I feel if something was to happen tomorrow, I've given everything I had to help people's lives be better so far. And I just want to keep expanding my reach to do that. But I am proud of the work that I do to keep not only growing myself, but using that to help others. So the lives that I've touched.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Well, and if you were to try and quantify it, I'm sure that that's an underestimation, because it doesn't count all the people that they go then impact.
That's right. So, that's right. Yeah.
What do you believe are the ingredients of a fulfilling life?
Oh, well, for me, it's to have faith of knowing there's something bigger here that you're here for, to show up for, that's guiding you. And I think that's so key, because you will fill yourself with so many other voids or chasing material things, and they will never fulfill you. It's got to be something bigger. So faith and purpose go hand in hand. And that moves to service, that the key ingredients are if you have faith, if you have purpose, if you know that you're here to use your gift, like we said, to serve others, then you don't get disappointed, because you're not looking at how the world's going to help me. Don't look at how the world's going to help you. Look at how you could serve the world. Mm. I'm pretty sure that's a JFK quote, totally, you know, changed up. Yeah. But so I want you to start thinking like success comes from how you show up and how you make a difference in the world. Like when you just asked me that question, you don't think of that often, but I sat there and I'm like, wow, but no matter what's in my bank account, I feel very successful in the sense of helping lives. And I don't mean that from an ego standpoint. I mean that from a humble standpoint.
Yeah.
But that's the keys to success, that you feel grateful for what, and that, look at all, I mean, I've had so many challenges to overcome, but there's been people that have had way harder challenges. Like, we're all in this together, but how do we keep using our gift to help others? So success is faith, it's purpose, it's serving, it's giving, and it's loving yourself and loving others too. Because when you really do love who you are authentically and you show up authentically, truly you, you're happy. Don't try to be something you're not on social or in a space. Like when you walk in, you're in a business environment, don't be that person that's trying to be someone else. Be you. I wrote a quote the other day and it was about copycats. Don't be a copycat. Do you know that the greatest, most valuable piece of art is the original?
Right.
So why would you ever want to copy someone else's, whatever it may be? We might learn from others, but be your own original, because that is the most valuable piece of art. And people know value when they're around it. And they know value when you're authentically you. That has its high, you're originally you. So go be that. And that leads you to the most successful, happiest life, all those things.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm so glad that was my last question, because that was so good. I want to say thank you so much for being here. I know you talked about being present, and I can feel your presence, and your insight and wisdom from your long career is just so valuable. And I can't wait to hear what everybody gets out of this conversation. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Wesley.
Thank you. If listeners want to hear more from you, to find out when your book comes out, if they want to follow you, how can they reach out?
Social. I'm active on social. If you message me, I message back. And so Instagram and Twitter is at the Coach Dar. I'm most active on Instagram. So if you wanted to head there, but I do put the same content on all of them, but I'm going to be most active and be able to respond to you best if you go to Instagram. And then my website is coachdar.com. And Facebook is just Darlene Santor, D-A-R-L-E-E-N, and then Santor, S-A-N-T-O-R-E. And I think that's the same for LinkedIn. So those are all the places that you could reach out and connect with me and write a message. And if you have a question or anything, I'd love to stay in touch. And I put golden nuggets. They're like little pay it forward inspiration. So check in every day on social. I'll put something on there and you'll maybe you'll find it good for you, or you'll pay it forward to someone else.
Love that. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Love what you're doing, Presley. Thanks for having me on.
Before you take off, just a few quick things. First, thank you so much for listening this entire episode. Creating this podcast brings me so much joy, and I just have the most sincere appreciation for you listening, supporting the show, and hopefully getting something out of it. Don't forget that any resources or tools mentioned in this episode are conveniently linked for you in the show notes, and you can find those in your podcast app or at heypresleycreative.com/podcast. Please share this episode with a friend and then screenshot you listening and post it on your social media or your Instagram story and tag me at Hey Presley so I can see that you're listening and thank you personally. And if you really want to spread the love and you're listening on your iPhone, please take just a couple moments, leave a review in your podcast app. That gives us so much fire to continue working on this and lets me know what you're liking and what you want more of. Lastly, if you haven't already, don't forget to hit subscribe so that each and every time I post a new show, your phone will give you a sweet little reminder to listen in. If you have questions for me or suggestions for the show, find me on Instagram at Hey Presley or shoot an email to podcast@heypresley.com. This episode is brought to you by Hey Presley Nutrition, the sustainable and practical approach to reaching your goals. My nutrition coaching company was founded on the basis of empowering you to be successful long-term through accountability, real-life strategies, teaching, and a holistic approach. It's month-to-month, it's entirely personalized, you work directly one-on-one with a coach, and there's no templates or meal plans or cookie-cutter protocols, just what works for you. Pop over to heypresleynutrition.com to see some of the amazing results that clients have achieved and to schedule a free phone consultation with a coach to see if it's a good fit for you. Exclusive to listeners of this show, enter promo code PODCAST, all one word, when you sign up for a sweet discount on your first month. Thank you, make it a wonderful day, and I'll catch you on the next episode.